This is CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty. We just found out that Sia shops with Tony Yengeni some of the time. Interesting.
Circles you roll in.
You can't throw one-liners out like that.
No,
please
you
don't paint us in the same brush.
Sia, whenever he goes shopping, he bumps into Tony Yengeni.
It's only happened like three times.
We'll talk about that with justice in a little while. Five Fingers for Marseille is the movie that we are putting on in an exclusive Cliff Central movie preview, which is happening next week. If you want to come along, you need to email us. What's that email address? Events. Is that right, Sia? Events
yes.
at cliffcentral.com. You can get your hands on some tickets. A local movie that had its world premiere at the Toronto Film Festival last year. It's been described as a must-see masterwork. Visually stunning and captivating. One you don't want to miss. The lead character, Tao, is played by Vuyo Dabula. And he goes back to his village many years later after he has... discovered that the town is under a new threat and he's got to fight to free it. So it sounds like the kind of story you can get into. Five Fingers for Marseille is what it's called. It's on Wednesday next week, the 28th of March at 7 o'clock in the evening at Sturkinnikor Cinema Nouveau, Rosebank Mall. For the movie you don't want to miss, email events at cliffcentral.com to get your hands on tickets. Remember, it's a first come, first serve situation. That's events at cliffcentral.com.
It's actually cool. We've never done a local movie before.
Yeah.
And so we'll have one of the actors stop in for a little chat next
like
week
a,
as well.
Oh, that's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
it's nice. Warren Masimola, who's been all over the world getting awards for this movie. So it's
cool.
Exciting.
Alrighty. Let's get into some news, Mubs, while we're waiting for justice. What do you got for us?
Well, everybody is upset at Facebook and its leader.
Why are you looking at Ben?
Oh, man.
I get the feeling he's going to love the story.
Tell us more.
So Facebook shares took a 7% tumble earlier this week.
As in shares of things that you share on your timeline or actual like money shares?
Money shares, Gareth. This is after the New York Times and The Guardian, including reports from The Intercept, broke the news that an estimated 30 to 50 million Facebook users' data was siphoned and used to market candidates in the 2016 U.S. election.
Huh.
The data specifically served conservative candidates, namely Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, with Trump's camp appearing to be the main beneficiary.
Wow.
Yes, the contention is that Facebook user data was being used unethically. So now there is a U.S. resident who is suing Facebook because of this. The complaint was filed at the U.S. District Court in San Jose, California, and it marks the first of what some people are saying may be many lawsuits that will be seeking damages over the network's ability to protect their privacy. And then very recently, Mark Zuckerberg came out and he said, you know, well, he admitted the mistake and he outlines that the company will try better to fix things. This is after he remained silent for quite some time, but then he eventually broke his silence. Yeah, posting on Facebook saying that the company has a responsibility to protect its users' data.
And
yeah,
now he had to admit that he screwed up.
Yes.
But also, you know, Zuckerberg can't do anything until he's in the sun for at least 3 hours in the morning.
Wow.
So you must have been busy inside working. You need to get that, get going.
Oh, is that why he took so long to come?
So let me try.
Down and dormant.
I'll try and explain this to you as simply as I can in terms of how it actually all unfolded. All the way back in June 2014, there was a researcher called Alexander Kogan who developed a personality quiz app for Facebook. You remember you'd go on Facebook and it would say, let me work out your personality. You might be one of, I don't know, 20 different personality types. And most of us would have filled that in.
Mm.
Oh, maybe I'm this kind of person. Let me see what my friends are.
Mm.
We would have passed it around. People love stuff that's about themselves. So it was made by the Psychometric Center, which is a Cambridge University laboratory where this guy Kogan worked. About 270,000 people installed that app on their Facebook account. But as with any Facebook developer at the time, he could access data about those users or their friends, right? When Kogan's app asked for that data, it saved that information into a private database instead of immediately deleting it. He provided that private database containing about 50 million Facebook users in their information to voter profiling company Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica used it to make 30 million psychographic profiles about voters. How do you like that? Cambridge Analytica has significant ties to Donald Trump's most prominent supporters and advisors. Rebecca Mercer, who's a Republican donor and co-owner of Breitbart, sits on the board of Cambridge Analytica. Her father, Robert Mercer, invested $15 million in Cambridge Analytica on the recommendation of his political advisor, guess who, Steve Bannon. On Monday, hidden camera footage appeared to show Alexander Nix, who's Cambridge Analytica's CEO, offering to bribe and blackmail public officials around the world. If Nix did so, it would violate UK law, and Cambridge Analytica suspended him on Tuesday. Cambridge Analytica also used its psychographic tools to make targeted online ad buys for the Brexit Leave campaign in the 2016 presidential campaign of Ted Cruz and in the 2016 Trump campaign. If any British Cambridge Analytica employees without a green card worked on any of those US campaigns, they did so in violation of federal law. So there's a whole lot that comes into this. And it's not just about Zuckerberg screwing up, but it's about who these people at Cambridge Analytica are and how much information you can get out of people now thanks to social media. Because we always think about it as a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I taught you the other day, I explained the steps you have to go through to download your own Facebook file. Did you do it?
And to see what they have on us.
Every picture you've ever sent, every picture you've ever received, every message thread that you've ever had with anyone. And they can go in there and look at that stuff. I am finished with Facebook.
So are you bothered enough to delete your account?
I think I've got to shut it down. I really do.
Yeah, I shut down my account.
You were ahead of your time, my buddy.
No. It's just because I stopped using it. So I thought, well, if you're not using this thing, then just get rid of it.
And I'll tell you what. I've realized a couple of things in the last 3 years or so. First of all, life is way better without, like, radio and television in terms of the news and, you know, commentary and all that stuff. Because on the internet, you can find much better stuff anyway. Number one, mainstream media you can cut out of your diet. Number two, I've steadily realized this over a period of time, but if you're on Facebook and Twitter, you start believing that's the real world, and it isn't. And you actually have to go into the real world to figure it out. I mean, yesterday I posted a link, ironically, on social media, but about how we don't all hate each other. The Institute of Race Relations, which does a lot of research in this respect, published an incredible article, which you've got to go and look at. It's on my Twitter timeline from yesterday. Just go and read the article. I didn't write it. The Institute didn't opine this. They went and did research. They asked people, what do you really feel about your fellow South Africans? How do you feel the country's doing? Are you optimistic about the future? What are your main needs? What are your preoccupations? What do you care about? What do you need to survive? These are the kinds of questions they asked. Turns out people aren't as interested in hating each other or in land as everybody in the political sphere keeps telling us they are. They're actually interested in urban housing, jobs, getting their kids through school, being able to afford transport, and ironically, and this must piss off a lot of people on the left and right of our political spectrum, they're not bothered by black and white as much as everybody else says they are. Most people are just trying to make their lives work.
Get through the day.
Right. So go and read this because it gives you a really good idea of what the world actually is like out there. And remember, the 3 or 4 million people in South Africa on Twitter that we keep thinking are steering the conversation, they're having a conversation with themselves. 3 million people. If you put the white and the colored and the Indian population together, it's like 4 times that. And that's the smallest part of the population. We've got 55 million people in this country. Not even 5% of those people are on Twitter. Don't believe what Twitter tells you is true. That's the real story, I think, of the last couple of months. And don't believe Zuckerberg either. Anything Facebook tells you is probably bullshit as well. The stuff that they're actually letting you know that they're using, let alone the stuff that you don't know that they're using. I can see Sia just sent a private message to this person because he used these words. I know what I'll sell him. I'll market him Russian brides. Well, not in your case, obviously, Sia. But you get it.
I really do wonder if people will start deleting their accounts here. Because one of the co-founders of WhatsApp, and WhatsApp was bought by Facebook, mm-hmm. Brian Acton, he's leading this entire movement of hashtag delete Facebook. Now, we don't know whether he's just bitter because Facebook bought WhatsApp. Yeah. Or the fact that really maybe he might know some juicy details from inside.
He may well, huh?
But he's just saying the smartest thing to do right now is just delete it.
Well, Ipsos, who are the guys who do all the surveys, right? A majority, 73% of South Africans, think things in the country are on the wrong track. Financial political corruption currently occupies the top spot for concern, with 78% of people saying this. That's financial and political corruption is their biggest concern.
Okay.
So they've published a survey called What Worries the World, and it finds most people across the participating 27 nations believe their country is on the wrong track. That includes Brazil, Mexico, Italy, and Hungary, which are the most anxious nations. So, Brazil, 83% of people in Brazil are worried their country's on the wrong track. Mexico, 82%. Italy, 82%. Hungary, 76%. Canada, 57% anxious. And South Africa have seen a big increase in optimism. We're only at 20% anxiety by it. Well, 27%, sorry. In Britain, slightly more than average think the country's on the wrong track, and there's a reduction of 5 points since December. So they've done an adult survey. They asked people under the age of 65 in these countries: Argentina, Australia, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, China, France, Britain, Germany, Hungary, India, Israel, Italy, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, South Africa, Serbia, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Peru, Poland, South Korea, Spain, Sweden, Turkey, and the US.
Wow.
Finds that people across the 27 countries think that their country is on the wrong track, most people, but there is a very wide-ranging and different score across the world. Isn't that interesting?
Hmm.
So there we go. If you want to see what really worries the world, first three things, the big three: unemployment, financial and political corruption, and poverty or social inequality. Those are the three biggies. Top five South African issues. Number one. Guess what it is?
Jobs.
Yeah.
Unemployment is number three.
Oh?
Yeah.
The biggest corruption?
Political issue in South Africa, or the biggest South African issue, is financial and political corruption, 68%. That worries people more than anything else. Then crime and violence, 63%.
Mm.
Then unemployment, 55%. Then poverty and social inequality, 29%. And then finally education at 27%.
Wow.
And globally, unemployment's the number one, financial political corruption number two, poverty number three, crime and violence four, and healthcare five. So there we go. Isn't that interesting?
It's also interesting how common our problems are on a global scale.
Yeah, everybody shares the same problems. We always think, oh, it's a South African thing.
It's not.
No. Everybody's worried about the same stuff. Those five things could be anywhere in the world.
You'll go to Australia and that'll still be the complaint going around.
Correct. There's also this Institute of Race Relations one that I mentioned while we're talking about studies. It's revealed that there is an improvement in race-related issues in the country. 77% of black respondents saying they have
Neverly.
77% of black respondents say they have not personally experienced racism. That report, titled Race Relations in South Africa, is based on a study released on Tuesday ahead of Human Rights Day, found relations between South Africans of different races are mainly positive, with an overwhelming majority believing that the different races need each other for progress and there should be equal opportunities for all. Isn't that interesting?
Hmm.
It's important to guard against complacency on race issues, for 61% of black respondents also agree South Africa is now a country for black Africans and whites must take second place. But, according to this, close on 80% of all respondents agreed that better education and more jobs would in time make the present differences between the races steadily disappear. So there's some interesting thoughts from the IRR. All right. It's always good to look at these things. Anything else you want to throw in before justice comes in, Mubs? News-wise? Well, I can tell you about a couple of things.
Okay.
First of all, you know we talked about David Beckham the other day, the coolest man on earth. Footballer, he owns his own football club in Miami now. He's married to Posh Spice, who's a designer, fashion, what would you call her? Fashion savant?
Yes, and now coming back with the Spice Girls.
Damn right. I've got four kids. Do you know their kids' names? Come on, let's go.
How much do I get for this?
There's Zola 7.
Brooklyn,
seven. Romeo, Cruz, and Harper 7.
There we go. Boom.
Oh, I do know them.
Yes, you do.
How sad.
David Beckham. He was in South Africa to launch his own whiskey, which is called Hague Clubman. We caught up with David and discovered a connection between him and a whiskey that breaks the rules. You can go to cliffcentral.com and download the podcast to hear in his own words why this is something David Beckham cares about. And if you want to try the whiskey, you can do that too. It's available in South Africa now. Hague Clubman, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Yas. Someone just sent me this great picture too. May your boss never find out how much harder you are capable of working.
Oh, yeah, yeah, drink
never,
to that.
Never want right. that. You know.
Hey guys, in the song Hotel California, there's a line that goes, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. I think they were talking about Facebook. Mm. Yeah, because even if you delete your account, don't they keep your information?
Of course. It's there.
Yeah, it's theirs now.
In fact, if you delete it, then they don't have to be responsible for you anymore. They can just say, oh, we know about this guy, but he left. So anybody who wants his info, it's up for grabs. Huh?
Well, I don't want to get paranoid about this.
Yeah, you've got to get paranoid. Someone says, Mark Zuckerberg is really sly. Popular Facebook quizzes often ask users to answer a series of shareable personal questions ranging from the name of their pet to their birth city. Some people see them as a fun way to bond with friends or a way to make new ones. But as one local police department in Massachusetts recently noted on Facebook, many of these queries are similar, if not identical, to security questions used by banks and other institutions. Did you ever get a question about like your mother's maiden name or what your first pet was called?
Yeah.
Yes, because you thought it was just innocent fun.
Right. Meanwhile,
they're able to then piece things together. Exactly. So they know you have pets and they know where you come from. And
guess what the Zuckerberg's up to?
Oh, guys, I really don't want us to sound so pessimistic, but do you really think this was his intention from the beginning?
Yes.
Okay.
Why else was he sent to this planet?
Oh, Ben.
To this planet.
Okay, then.
Okay.
That's your feelings, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Oh. I think he just got twisted and crazier in his power position.
No.
I'll accept that's me being naive if that's the case, but oh, shame.
All right. Hey, by the way, if you missed our conversations last week, we had a lot of really cool discussions. We had Tracy Going. We had
Jordan B.
Peterson. We had Jeremy Thompson from Sky News. We had David Beckham. There is a slew of great interviews for you to listen to, and you can find them all on cliffcentral.com. So if you haven't had a look at our archive, just type in the name of someone who you are interested in, and 9 times out of 10, they'll pop up as an interview we've had here. We've spoken to tons of people over the years, and all of them are fascinating. All people that we've had in here have been terrific guests, and without exception, we've learned something from each and every one of them. So go and take a look, and you can see for yourself.
All right, this is a bizarre story because it's sad because somebody has lost their life.
Oh, no.
But then at the same time, you have to try and prevent yourself from laughing.
Oh.
It involves a factory worker who died after a colleague of his, who he'd originally helped to get the job, allegedly inserted a compressed air hose into his anus.
Oh, Jesus.
And turned it on.
Oh, my God.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Sorry.
That's why I said you have to try and stop yourself from laughing.
How did it get into the person's anus?
40-year-old Ravinder was an employee at a plywood manufacturing plant in a small village in northern India. And local media have reported that Ravinder, who was regularly mocked for wearing shabby tattered clothes, was attacked by his colleague, Anjan Misra, when he bent down to pick something up.
Oh my God.
Misra reportedly inserted an air hose into Ravinder's anus and turned it on.
He was wearing clothes?
Which was met with roars of laughter from their fellow co-workers. But the air compressor, which was used at the factory to cut through blocks of wood, was extremely powerful.
Oh my God.
And after the hose had been inserted into his anus, Ravinder is said to have stumbled before collapsing, and then he died.
Oh, that's horrendous. They used this to cut through wood?
Yes.
That's a lot of power.
Yeah.
Must have just sawn through his organs like a knife.
Sure.
God, factory workers everywhere in the world are shitty to each other.
It is said that
it's like a playground.
It is said that he died of internal hemorrhaging and organ damage.
Yep.
So they alerted the manager, and then, yeah, the guy was rushed to hospital, but then he didn't make it.
Of course he didn't make it. Imagine having that kind of air pressure thrown up your anus. Tell you what, you got to be so careful. You got to bend over and watch your colleagues. If you're going to bend over around some of your colleagues in certain work situations, they're going to try and take advantage. And not in the way that you think. Imagine a compressed air hose that can cut through wood. Do you know how much power that thing has? And these guys worked with that all day. It's not like they didn't know what it could do. Oh, this will be funny. Let's just put this up his asshole. Man, that's some mean stuff. Listen, you can catch Chance the Rapper along with Shane Eagle, Nadia Nakai, and Frank Casino at the Castle Light Unlocks concert at the Ticket Pro Dome in Joburg on the 30th of April. I'm reminding you because the next day's a public holiday and there's no reason to miss out. Hey, speaking of public holidays, we've got this week is only 4 days, right? Because of yesterday being a holiday. Mm-hmm. Next week is only 4 days because the Friday's a holiday.
What's
Good Friday.
Yeah, next Friday.
Are we here already?
Yes.
Are we going into the Easter madness?
So next Friday is Good Friday. So next week's 4 days.
And then that means that the Monday then is
the
Easter
week
Monday.
Is correct.
Wow.
So then we have another 4 day week. So this week was 4 days, next week's 4 days, the next week is 4 days. So you won't be overworked. And two of them at least are over a weekend. So that makes for a nice long weekend next weekend. Excited?
Sure.
Damn right. So get your tickets now at CompuTicket for the Castle Light Unlocks concert. This one's at the end of April, where we have the 27th as a holiday, and then there's Workers' Day on the 1st. You know how it goes. So Castle Light Unlocks. It's at the Ticket Pro Dome, the O'Neill Africa Experience podcast on cliffcentral.com. You can also find out more about this. Previous episodes include live performances from Lady Zamar and Prime Circle. Very, very nice. If you ever heard that show, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you've never heard that show, you need to get on board and check it out. It's fantastic. Very, very good. Music collaborations between some of South Africa's most well-known artists, even artists from the rest of the continent that you may or may not have heard from. It's terrific and worth 20 minutes of your time just to hear these incredible collaborations. It can only happen here. All right, anything else?
Ringo Starr got knighted.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, shame.
He was the last Beatle to really kind of receive any award at all, wasn't he? They almost forgot about him.
He tweeted with wife Barbara Bach, who was a Bond girl once upon a time.
Oh, really?
He tweeted, another day in the life, peace and love.
Peace and love.
Well, that's his thing, you know. That's what Ringo says every time. Peace and love, peace
so,
and love.
Ringo's still making music. He's still releasing albums.
Yes, he is. Nobody's listening.
Shame, is he?
Yeah, his latest album, I think, is called Add More Love. Give More Love.
What was Ringo's role in the group again?
He was the drummer.
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
Often referred to as not even the best drummer in the Beatles. Ringo went on to then become the voice of Thomas the Tank Engine. And you know, in 1969, John Lennon was awarded an MBE.
Yes.
And he said to Lizzie, no thanks.
Yeah, John Lennon turned it down. Then Paul's now Sir Paul McCartney. George Harrison, I think, was also given some award. So really, this has come at the far end of Ringo's tenure. I mean, they almost forgot about him completely.
Mm.
But now all four Beatles can have said to have at least been offered an honor by Buckingham Palace. And it was Prince William who actually did the honors and knighted Sir Ringo Starr. Sir Ringo Starr. So when you're writing him fan mail, please make it to Sir Ringo Starr.
Peace and love, peace and love. I want to tell you, please, after the 20th of October, do not send fan mail to any address that you have. Nothing will be signed after the 20th of October. If that has a date on the envelope, it's going to be tossed. I'm warning you with peace and love, but I have too much to do. So no more fan mail. Thank you, thank you. And no objects to be signed. Nothing. Anyway, peace and love, peace and love.
Can you imagine if he was asked any questions by Prince William, he would have just said, peace and love, peace and love.
Yeah. But he would have been talking to Eamon Holmes because he also got knighted yesterday.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I would love to know what the criteria for that is. What boxes do you need to tick off before you qualify to be knighted?
And like, and how does the process work? Do they take Lizzie her morning tea and crumpets and go, right, which one of these do you like?
Actually, these days it's mostly decided by the Prime Minister and by the government. So they give her a list and she goes, yeah. And then she just ticks it off herself. She says, okay, sure. She doesn't even really have much to do with that. It's now the British government that gets to decide who gets knighted and who doesn't. So obviously someone was a big Ringo Starr fan because there's no way that he got there on his merits.
Yeah, they just felt bad at the fact that he was the only Beatle that hadn't been given any
acknowledgement.
Who else have we not yet knighted?
Oh, Ringo Starr, Your Majesty. Who? Ringo Starr. Remember the drummer from the Beatles?
Yeah. Thomas Tank Engine. Ah, Ringo.
Oh, Ringo. Oh, shame. We should give him something. It's the least we can do.
All right, look who's here. It's Justice Malala. We missed you last week. How are you, Justice?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Much to discuss. People are very excited. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's, and there's a lot to talk about. Today, the 22nd of March, Justice Malala, where do we start? SARS?
Oh, yeah. We can start with SARS. You know what I like about SARS? It's that, you know, it's like one domino falling. Boom. And then you have all these others. So you can imagine Shaun the Sheep. We've discussed him for so long on this show. We're almost tired of talking about it.
Yes.
But already you can see he's sitting there thinking, oh, they fired the other guy because he's incompetent. He can't do his job. And he protected the Guptas because there's a specific, even he in his response, Tom Mayani, I mean, from SARS, says, yeah, and you accuse me of doing something for some family. And this family is referring to is the Guptas, of course, who had a 70 million rand VAT refund allegedly due back to them. And while many, many hundreds of thousands of South African companies are waiting for their tax refunds, for their VAT refunds, these guys got paid like, ooh, immediately.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, you know, as he puts it, Tom Moyane went and said, how is it going with that VAT refund for that company?
It's who you know.
And he thought that, no, he'd just asked the question. They'd say, no, we're not paying them. And he'd said, yes, fine.
Yeah,
no
sure.
Way. Anyway, what I like about this story is that the cleanup of the institutions has nicely begun. SARS has been incredible, guys, you know. So think about the 70 million rand VAT refund that the Guptas got.
Yes.
Everyone else, the tax ombud, I think it's Judge Mwepe, has said in the past that why is it so many companies are sitting there waiting to be paid back and they're not being paid back? These are, you know, there might be some dodgy companies there, but there are many, many, many upstanding companies that need that money back so that they can continue to operate.
I mean, it's cash flow, right? If you suddenly have to pay a tax bill, they don't say to you, well, we'll give you a month or two.
No, you
will be shut down if you don't. So you have to pay. And then if you're owed money by them, you must just wait.
They make you wait for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. Now, you know, you've got things to do with that money. And
sure.
It's accumulating interest.
And it's your money.
It's your money. But no, it doesn't happen. So it goes on and on and on and on. And some companies end up being bankrupted. Some companies have to shut down. People are begging at the doors of SARS. They're not getting it.
So,
in the case of the Guptas, it was just one word from the he personally intervened, and they were paid that 70 million rand. Now, we know that Mr. Moyane's association with the Gupta family is through Duduzani Zuma. Duduzani Zuma used to be looked after by Mr. Tom Moyane when they were in exile in Mozambique. So the young Duduzani was would be in Tom Moyane's care as a friend of the family. And they still can be, well, before Duduzani hopped on a jet plane and went to Dubai, but they used to have little meetings in Midrand and elsewhere where so they've been spotted in the past.
Let's just do a quick refresher course on the history of SARS, because the current Minister of Public Enterprises, who was also Minister of Finance before Pravin Gordhan, used to be the SARS commissioner a long time ago.
Yes.
In fact, many people credit him with getting SARS going and making it a really functional, really slick operation. Tax collection was done well. Refunds were paid. It was an honest organization. It was regarded as the pillar of stability in a government where other departments didn't do their job.
Absolutely.
So then after Pravin was moved into finance, it was handed over to?
Ace Magashule. No, not Ace Magashule. Opa Magashule.
If it was headed to Ace Magashule, there would be no SARS. Okay, so Opa Magashule, he did a pretty decent job there. It didn't deteriorate horribly under him. Then we had that Adrian Lacay and
And then
Von Lochrenberg situation.
Yes.
And Ivan Pillay.
Ivan Pillay was the acting commissioner.
And they were all gotten rid of by Tom Moyane and his henchmen.
Exactly. So what happened was that every tax collection agency in the world has an investigative and intelligence gathering arm. So they would say, we need to do something about tobacco companies, and there are lots of tobacco companies that don't seem to be paying tax, and many of them are manufacturing cigarettes and putting them out as no-name brands or this.
Adrian Mazzotti, for example.
Ah, yes.
You know, Julius's friend.
Friends of friends, yes. Anyway, so that's what they decide to do, but then
they establish this unit, which is normal in the course of trying to find out whether people owe the government tax.
Exactly.
You know, that's what you do.
And this thing was mooted way back in 2004 at an intelligence meeting in Mafikeng, funny enough, with all the intelligence agencies. It was, now we need to do this for tax collection and
Right.
Anyway, Tom Moyane arrives and just basically fires everyone else.
Calls it a rogue unit.
Calls it a rogue unit. They're accused of all kinds of things and so forth and so forth. We now know that a lot of it was just...
Well, it was nonsense. It was thrown out. The court said it was outrageous and shouldn't have stood.
Exactly.
And it basically, that Tom Moyane was an agent for state capture.
Tom Moyane basically seemed to be working for... primarily Jacob Zuma, and what Jacob Zuma wanted, Jacob Zuma got. You will remember that, I don't know if any of you guys have read Jacques Poe's book, The President's Keepers, but Jacques Poe does an incredible thing. In Jacques Poe's book, it's where all those allegations, and I think they're all true, that Jacob Zuma was earning 1 million rand.
As a security guard.
Well, he worked for a company called Royal Security. I don't know, Mabale, if that means he's a security guard. He must be the highest paid security guard in the world. Anyway, so he's earning 1 million rand a month in 2009. He is sworn in as president, but he doesn't stop working. He just keeps on working and earning his 1 million a month for 4 months. Now, that book shows that some guy sitting at SARS somewhere in KZN says, but there's this employee, J.G. Zuma, is earning 1 million a month, but he's not paying tax. So asks, can we have some tax here? But nothing happens. Now, you will know that 2 weeks ago, Jacques Poe's house in Ribeirac Castel was raided. So, you see how Tom Moyane operates. The point is, Mabale comes along and says, justice, justice, the studio's burning. And I turn around and say, how dare you tell me the studio's burning? As I shout at her.
She's the problem.
She's the problem. Instead of dealing with the fire. It's like, what's going on here? So Jacob Zuma has not had a single visit from any South authority, no one's felt up his collar and said, Baba, come this way, let's go talk. No! What's going on is that the whistleblower
is blamed.
And
isn't that ironic? I mean, Tomoyane shut down that rogue unit because he believed that they were extrajudicial and that they weren't necessarily a legal entity that he was prepared to be in charge of. But then he conducts these kinds of raids on journalists, and that's okay.
I mean, I don't see any
irony in it.
What's incredible is that, you know, exactly the sorts of things that so-called rogue unit was going to expose are the things that he doesn't want to see exposed. Mm. So these flirtations with people in the tobacco industry who are doing all sorts of things, right, underhanded things, that's exactly the sort of thing that he doesn't want to see exposed. So you can see what the modus operandi is very, very transparent.
But Tom Moyane, basically, we will do well to be rid of him. I saw your tweet the other day that this is a good sign that Cyril is unencumbered now in his ability to change state institutions.
I think it's fantastic. I think there are several institutions. Go back to 5 years ago. You, Mabale, Ben, all of the people in this room would have started clapping. The minute you heard that Tulima Donsela has parked her car downstairs, you'd have been singing. It would have been like, I don't know, you know, Shembe Church in here.
Yes, sure.
Just happiness. Why? Because people believe that the public protector was for the little man and the little woman, the poor. Right now, if someone said to you, guys, Busisi Mkhwebane has just parked downstairs,
we would be arming ourselves at the door.
I tell you. So you look at that institution. You look at if someone said to you, Vusi Pikoli is coming to the studio, you'd say, ah, what a great guy. Yeah. Fantastic. Da, da, da. If someone said to you, Sean Abrahams is coming.
No, we'd shut the doors. So this is a bit of a cleanup that's happening here.
Yes. My view is that there are, it's that, and then you look at the state-owned enterprises. So Eskom is being cleaned up now, but SAA, a new guy came in, Jahana, and I see that he's trying to clean up.
Okay.
Suspended one of the CFOs and CEOs of the technical unit. Let's see what he does there. Then there's Danel, where the Guptas had their hand right in there as well. And that needs cleaning up. And then there's other state-owned enterprises, small ones here and there. Those two need to be cleaned up. The water boards, which Nomvula Mokonyane left in a mess, those two need to be cleaned
up. Cyril kept her as a minister somehow. All right, let's just for a minute be a devil's advocate here. Mm. Is it in our interests as good citizens to have SARS functioning at full capacity? I mean, let me be cheeky about this.
No, it is.
If SARS doesn't work,
yeah,
isn't that great for people who don't want to pay tax?
No. It's terrible. It's terrible. Let me tell you what the problem is. The problem is, you sit here, and then you say, "Ah, let's have a look at how the state operates," and da 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 da. And you give your opinion, and you go for it. 2 weeks later, Ben is being audited by the tax man. The problem with the tax authority not being a fair, clean organization that goes for him and goes for me and goes for you is that it starts being used to target so-called enemies.
It becomes capricious.
It becomes capricious. It's no longer that Ben didn't pay. It's Ben said something, and we'll show him. And if he doesn't shut up, then we'll come down hard on him.
Someone said once that when Julius Malema was going through all his tax problems, which may or may not be, I've got very good reason to believe, and I'm sure you have too, just based on the evidence that he just was a delinquent taxpayer and that he didn't believe in paying tax, which is ironic for someone who wants the state to take control of everything. Including every piece of land and money that he doesn't have. But it seems even the stuff he does have, he can't pay his taxes on. But there were people who alleged at the time, because it was at the time that he was thrown out of the ANC, and that this was a malicious campaign against him.
Exactly. Now, for me, whether it's true or not, the key thing is to cleanse the institution so that we can't have that situation again. If Julius was targeted because he was anti-Zuma, then we have a problem. It means that the institution was dirty, and so it means that the SARS was exactly like in, this is 2018, in October 2016, Sean Abrahams gave a press conference in which he said, I'm laying charges of fraud and what a corruption and so forth against Pravin Gordhan. And he uttered that famous line, the days of disrespecting the NPA are over.
Mm-hmm.
3 months later, he had to withdraw those charges. He gave a press conference in which he said, there is no basis upon which to charge this man.
Right. So we must disrespect your stupid organization.
Exactly. So what was he saying 4 months before? Essentially, he brought those charges for political reasons. Mm. That Pravin was against Zuma, and so...
So is he next to fall?
He must be the next to fall. I don't see how he stays in office, given what he's done. Given his behavior over the past few years since he's been in the job. But let's remember, Cyril Ramaphosa seems to have an axe, and he's not letting it fall.
Mm.
The Constitutional Court has already ruled that this man, because Ngasana before him was fired, essentially the court said he was bribed, he was given 17 million rand to go away. Then they said, this is not a payment of his benefits, this was a bribe, that look, I'll offer you so much money, you have no option but to go. I mean, if I offered you, Asiya, 17 million rand and said, Baba, please vacate your chair.
Sure. Wouldn't even think twice. Right?
Exactly. Oh,
done.
Yeah. I'm walking out of here. Okay. So Ngasana gets offered 17 million rand to walk away. What's the poor guy supposed to do? Hmm. So he walks away. So the court then says, this was a bribe.
Right.
So the man must firing is.
But why is Cyril sitting on the pot with this one?
I'm not sure.
Does he need him still for some reason? Did he want to wait for him to be the one to reinstate the charges against Jacob Zuma? Because then he can close that chapter and it can move on into someone clean.
Maybe I have to say.
And who do you think could take over if Sean Abrahams was fired?
I don't know. I mean, look, everyone wants Tulima Dansela to take over. I suspect she won't, but...
At the NPA.
Yeah, a lot of people say, imagine she walks in and has three cases, that just set the standard that from now on, this is how we do things. This is who...
You mentioned SARS and how it has to be sterilized. It has to be clean.
Yeah.
Because if SARS is politically tainted... Everybody's a target, potentially.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean...
And nobody's a target,
and in terms of the Tax Act, remember, you can't really discuss your tax matters with anyone except your lawyer. No one...
In fact, they tried to say that talking about Jacob Zuma's tax was the reason that they needed to arrest Jacques Poe.
Exactly.
So SARS is one, but the NPA is almost a bigger deal, because if you have someone who's in charge of the NPA... who's capriciously, willy-nilly throwing around criminal charges at people or deciding not to prosecute people, which in this country seems to be the greater crime at the moment, that there are people out there who should have been charged that are not because they have friends in high places. The NPA almost has to be even more sanitary.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Like the person at the position of the head of the NPA has to be the most honest and scrupulous human being.
I'll tell you, I spoke to Birgit Kelle on Monday, and I found it extraordinary because he said something.
He's had a political renaissance.
Yes, he has. But he said something so interesting. He said, look, the Hawks were working on the case, but remember they have to work with the NPA, and there were disputes. He said, I said, what do you mean? He said, there were disputes. And anyway, I'm meeting the Minister of Justice about this issue. He says, because the Hawks were ready to arrest some people, but they weren't working together very well with the NPA. And if you think about it, at the Hawks, Benning Kameza is gone.
Yeah.
And now you have, what's her name? Advocate Martha Carter, as the acting head of the NPA.
She's the one who said that she didn't agree with Sean Abrams.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, there you have it. Essentially, it seems to me, Sean Abrams has been saying no. And she'd say, no, but we've got the evidence. We're going after Musebenzi's one in the Free State. Sorry, Mabale, about the Free State.
Mm. Yeah, it's fine. I can no longer defend the province.
But no, let's not do that.
All right. Can we turn our attention to some other things?
Yes.
Certainly, I'd like to hear more about your discussion with Becky Trele, but we can do that maybe in a minute or two. Mm. Something that has preoccupied lots of us in South Africa, because it kind of is a... it's a Marikana of the most vulnerable people in society.
Mm.
And it's not as obviously and gratuitously violent, because so many of these people died in desperate circumstances where no one was paying attention to them at all. So they died alone and probably very scared. And the life Esdimeni situation has been wrapped up, and Dikgang Moseneke decided that everybody who lost a loved one is to get a certain kind of cash compensation from the Gauteng government. There were hearings that lasted a long time. Everybody who was meant to come and give testimony did, including eventually Adani Mahlangu. But what do we have here? I mean, are we happy with this result? I asked on Tuesday, are we happy that certainly it's great that these families will be compensated in some way, you know, even if it's just for funeral costs and so on. And they deserve a whole lot more, but you can't bring back their loved ones. Are we happy with the result otherwise?
No, I'm personally outraged, actually. You know, there were 1,700 patients. Out of those 1,700 patients, the first time many of them had was when they were bundled onto trucks and put and driven somewhere in Randfontein, and you're driven to Atteridgeville. You don't know where you're going. You are mentally challenged. You're confused. You get to a place where, one, it's not registered. Two, there are no carers who understand how to work with mentally challenged people. Three, there are no files saying justice needs to get
a certain kind of drug
and so forth. You're confused. Many people get agitated, become all kinds of things. Even for someone who claims to be relatively mentally stable, if I am taken out of my home without explanation
in a truck.
Dumped somewhere else, I would be confused, I'd be agitated, I'd be all these things. But then it goes on. You know, there is a line in Dikgang Moseneke's report in which he talks about the first death, I think, of one of these people. And he says the only thing found in her stomach was toilet paper. People starved to death. And you know, you look at media coverage today, newspapers and so forth. You listen to politicians yesterday at Human Rights Day rallies, and no one says anything about the fact that 180 people died of starvation in the care of the government of the people. I mean, it just boggles the mind that we've just moved on. And it's like, oh, I'll give you 1.2 million rand, you're okay. Just go off and, you know.
Which, by the way, it's not the fiscus, it's not SARS who are responsible for this. It's not the ordinary taxpayers who are responsible for this. This is very definitely the responsibility of an incompetent Gauteng health administration.
Absolutely.
And there are people we know because they were useless at defending themselves in the hearings.
We know these people. We know what they did. We know that they were warned again and again, not once, not 10 times. They were warned so many times that this is a disaster.
So what happens to them? Because Mabali was saying to me this morning that there are criminal charges that will be pursued in some of these cases.
One must hope that criminal charges are
because
laid.
Do you remember Mahlangu's comment? She said something like, how do you expect me to know about this stuff? I'm the political head. I don't know anything about this stuff. I'm just a politician.
But the same two other people, in particular Dr. Bani Slebano, there was someone else who also testified, and they said they were scared. They were scared of her. They were scared to speak up. They were bullied. This is what happens when people will not listen. Many, many people stood to benefit from this. And I think it's a line of questioning that hasn't been pursued enough. But the criminality of it, Gareth, for me, is it's one thing. The second thing is that how can we, as a nation, continue with the situation where power gets away with these things? Because the Lifus Dimeni hearings and the arbitration goes hand in hand for me with what happened last week when a child, Lumka Mketwa, in the Eastern Cape in Bizana, went to the loo. She's six years old, goes to the loo at her school, falls into the pit latrine and dies. And she's, no one knows where she is. She's only found the next day. In 2014, William Komape died in Limpopo. Exactly the same thing. 5-year-old kid. In 4 years ago, we said never, never, never again. We were all outraged. There was all kinds of things from the powers that be. And nix, nothing has been done. There are today kids going into toilets and facing death in many, many parts of the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, maybe other provinces. There was a report issued by the Institute for Race Relations yesterday. And it was interesting. They looked at budgets for bodyguards, for security, for politicians.
Oh, this is Gareth Van Onselen's secret police force.
Secret police force. And they show how it's gone, particularly in the years 2008, 2009 to today, it's gone from 350 million rand per annum. That was the budget.
That's already a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's gone to 1.4 billion. So it's tripled in just 10 years.
You know, they always say that politicians who need that kind of protection aren't beloved of the people. And, you know, you see Cyril running on Sea Point Promenade the morning before he went to Parliament to be sworn in. That's all. Is that PR?
No, I think, I mean, he hasn't cut down.
Do you think they will cut down?
I hope so. He said that we'll reconfigure and so forth. Jacob Zuma went from...
He was paranoid.
Jacob Zuma went from 8 bodyguards to 21 bodyguards.
Yeah, and then a cavalcade of like 15 cars.
21 cars.
Oh, shit. I was behind.
You were way behind there. So I sit there and say, even with a quarter of that 1.3, 1.4 billion rand, we could have built toilets.
Mm-hmm.
And said the schools must maintain them as...
Right.
But we could have built toilets.
Just toilets. It's not expensive to do this compared to VIP protection units.
If there are 3,000 schools without toilets, we could have built those like that with that sort of money. And we'd have so much shame.
Probably already do budget for that in the education budget because it's the largest piece of our budget.
Exactly. There is a school infrastructure budget every year, and we still haven't done it. So... You know, I understand Cyril Ramaphosa got angry when he heard about that kid. He said to Angie Motshekga, do something and so forth and so forth. But 4 years ago, this was exactly the same thing.
Every year we hear about these pit toilets.
And so for me, it's who are we when we allow this sort of thing? You know, I don't know. You know, yesterday, one of the things we all went out and remembered what happened in Sharpeville. 69 people dead. 69 people shot by the police. And then many of those policemen went and shot them while they were on the ground, shot them dead. And we are outraged about what happened on that day. But I think if we are to say this new dispensation is better than what happened then, I don't understand how we let 188 people die. Bro. The life is too many things.
Well, even one child in a pit toilet's too many.
One child in a pit toilet.
But, I mean, but we should be better, is what we're saying, right?
We should be better. We are better than...
We certainly can't ride on the moral high ground if we are allowing things like this to happen under a current and supposedly open, free, democratic,
exactly.
progressive regime.
I don't understand. I don't understand how we can let that happen. It's just...
And by the way, this is in no way to forgive any of the hideous things that happened in the past.
But it's not a comparison.
It is to draw on how we can improve and where our immediate focus should be. Our immediate focus should be on these problems because these problems are solvable.
We are better than this. Every week, every child who dies, we must remind us that we are better than this. We could be. But we, you know, sometimes you listen to a Tsetani Mahlangu and you say, oh my word, you don't seem like you care that so many people have died.
It's her turn to eat.
And I think, you know, of all, Cyril Ramaphosa, I've been a big rah-rah guy for Cyril Ramaphosa the past 2.5-3 months. And I look at it. But when Cyril Ramaphosa went on his one of the walks you talk about and went along with Tsetani Mahlangu and
in Soweto,
and then he said, you know, we can't discard her because all that. I just thought
this is politicians protecting their own.
Yeah, it didn't feel right. It didn't sound right. I'm not one for a kangaroo court or vigilante force to go after Tsetani Mahlangu or whoever is responsible. But I thought you could have done this so differently. You could have stopped and said...
To stand up for her is almost beyond, you know, morality.
And I think Cyril needs to be aware of these things, particularly given what happened at Marikana.
He was shown to be insensitive there as well.
Exactly. And I think for him not to stop and say, I was absolutely, totally, whatever, innocent in the Marikana thing. But 34 people died, and we are now learning that some policemen went and shot those people.
Like a chop, point blank range. Execution style.
Exactly. You know, we can't ignore these things, and he can't get away morally with condoning it, as he seemed to be doing with Tsetani Mahlangu. So I think we need to, how shall I say?
This chapter's not closed.
This chapter's not closed, but we need to do better. We need to do more about black lives in particular.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's just what we would call the soft bigotry of low expectations I've brought up so many times before, that we get outraged by, you know, certain kinds of violence and other kinds of violence. We just kind of cast a blind eye on.
Yeah,
Justice, we've got two big things that we want to address this morning because we missed out last week. So land hearings I want to get to. And then very importantly, before we wrap up today, I want to talk about these attacks on the media by Floyd Shivambu and Juju and Tony Yengeni. But let's start with the land hearings.
Yeah. The land hearings, I think the key thing now is that there's been the heat and stuff since the motion was put to parliament and was passed, that a review panel will go around the country and will listen to Sia give his input, Mabale give her input, and so forth and so forth, and then come back and say, on the basis of this, now everyone can give their input. The Transvaal Agricultural Union, the Malala family, if they wish to do so, whoever wants to do it.
The South African Natives Forum.
Whoever wants to do it. it's important to go and do these things and actually present evidence, present facts, present the views.
This is actually where the work is done. This is not political grandstanding.
Exactly.
Vote rigging. This is not about trying to get people to sympathize with the cause. This is about the actual facts on the ground.
This is the actual facts on the ground. And that committee, the chairman is a very good MP. What's his name? Oliphant. And it will go around the country to the provinces, and I think they will hold some in Cape Town in Parliament proper. They have until August to make a recommendation. Mm-hmm. And I think people should go and have their say. Wherever you stand, it doesn't matter. We can all, grandstand and say my view is this, but if you don't go and say it on the record to this committee, you won't be able to challenge the result. You won't be able to do all the things that need to be done. So I think it's a very important, process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
will you be going, Justice?
I personally won't be going, but I'll be watching it very closely.
Sia, are you going to claim your land?
Well, I'll give that a miss up until my particular land, my people are from Clifton. That's the area. That's the land I'm fighting for. They're from beachfront facing pieces of land.
I see what you mean.
Yes.
That's where a parking space is $1 million, right?
Yeah.
There we go. That's right. That's the land of my people.
See, I just want the parking space. He's happy to settle for that.
I don't want much. Just that parking space.
All right. Finally, this constant, the battle seems to have gone. You see, the media is always the enemy to somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And usually it's to someone who's run out of enemies.
Yeah.
Because Jacob Zuma always used to rail against the media as being the enemy. The media always was controlled by this mysterious white monopoly capital, which we subsequently found out was a Bell Pottinger invention. Mm. Some people still believe it's a thing. The West is often blamed as some kind of, there's these meetings that get held in secret where black people in Africa are just not able to outmaneuver the West. It seems almost like an admission of kind of there's always going to be someone in charge of me, which is crazy. But in a country like this, where someone like Tony Yengeni, who went to prison for a time for something that was patently, we now call those Mercedes Benzes Yengenis. but he got out. It's unclear where his political loyalties lie at this point. Julius and Floyd, different story. They've used the media with aplomb to create for themselves a space to be able to be heard, to rally people around them for support in the EFF. But now they seem to be turning on the media. Why are these three gunning for the media? And in Floyd's case, aggressively, physically, and violently. What's this all about?
I think, the political winds are changing. Jacob Zuma's out. When Jacob Zuma was in power, you'll remember that in 2013 in particular, 2014, Julius Malema was persona non grata on the SABC, for example. They wouldn't interview him because the political powers that be didn't want him to be interviewed.
I was ever interfered with by management at the SABC was when I wanted to interview Julius.
Ah, there you go. So we know what this is. Who interviewed Julius Malema at that time? When you started this radio station,
he was our second guest.
Exactly. You interviewed him. You didn't care about political interference. Julius Malema was on my TV show again and again and again when that no one else would do it. He now turns around and says, our SABC, our great institution is now being taken over because Stephen Reuters, allegedly is going to join, SAFM. Turns around and says all these things about how this great institution that is called the SABC is being taken away and accuses ENCA of being a tool of white monopoly capital. Then you see Tony Yengeni, who exactly the same thing when he started standing up a bit against Jacob Zuma and so forth, wouldn't be heard on the SABC in the 2014 around that time. These are people who have been given oxygen, who've been interviewed, who've had free reign at independent media. Listen, independent media. So you can just see that actually these are people who haven't been committed to a free press. They were just trying to get their own bit. And now that they think they're in power, oh, we want our SABC. Why? Because we can control it. Because we can tell the management what to do and what not to do. But at the SABC, under the new board, you've seen new people come in. You've seen a new team beginning to sweep clean and saying we need real journalists. Mm-hmm. So what do you want when you say we want real journalists? You'll go and get a Stephen Reuters, for example, who's known to be independent and so forth. Suddenly,
Bongani Bingwa, and so forth.
People who will ask the tough questions. And that is why they are weeping and wailing and so forth. What we are seeing is that the Julius Malema, who said to that BBC journalist years ago, this is a revolutionary house. Get out of my place. All this, oh, you're a small boy, and so forth. Oh, it's all been hidden and coated under, I'm a Democrat, I'm fighting Zuma. Zuma's gone now. And the wolf is coming out of the ship.
The true colors, right?
Exactly. And I find it actually, it's just horrendous. And if there's anything I can, any advice I can give the young people of this world, like Sia.
Yes, Uncle
Justice is speaking now. Let me tell you this, son. When a politician speaks, just watch the other side of his mouth. Because, my word. Julius Malema has been going around, media freedom, Jacob Zuma is terrible, It's the same thing. He is Jacob Zuma under that skin. That's why he turns around now, he's attacking independent media. It's the same thing. Watch the other side of that mouth.
And I saw that hate speech bill has been passed.
Has it been passed?
Now, this worries me a little bit because we still don't know in this country, and we've had...
What hate speech is?
Well, we still don't know the difference between free and hate speech in so many situations. Mm. And sometimes it really does boil down to subjectivity.
Yeah.
And for this to go through, to allow the politicians to be the ones who are the arbiters here, is very dangerous for these very reasons.
Mm. No, absolutely. Because one day it's convenient to... say what Malala said yesterday is hate speech. The next thing it's freedom of speech and association. Correct. And so forth.
Depends on who's your side.
Exactly.
It's very much like what we started this discussion with Tom Moyane about.
Exactly.
Justice, thank you. That's a mouthful to chew on for the rest of the week.
Isn't it amazing that we didn't speak about Jacob Zuma once?
But I do want to, because it's gone quiet now. I mean,
been charged on Friday.
We know, but what's going on here? Because there's still lots of things that we need to resolve with respect to him. He isn't finished.
No, he isn't finished. But I'm interested in what he's doing in KwaZulu-Natal, pitching up at ANC meetings and so forth and so forth. Maybe next week.
Yeah, let's do that. Mm. Thank you, Justice Malala. The Burning Platform, cliffcentral.com. It's brought to you by Nando's. The best that you could get right here every week in political analysis and commentary. And we still want to talk about your discussion with Becky Taylor, but we'll get to that. All right.
We will.
All right. Thanks, Justice. It's 2 minutes after 8. Let's get into the unnews for this morning and see what's going on over there. You ready? You want to hear it straight away? Let's go. No messing around here. That's the truth. All right. First and foremost, this might interest you. Stephen Hawking appears to have predicted the end of the world just weeks before his death. Showing scientists are downloading his brain to secure servers, and startling revelations like this are starting to appear. Hawking believes that once Mark Zuckerberg gets 51% of the world onto Facebook, the Earth will change forever, and all users will turn into lizards and carry out the commands of Zuckerberg, their grand ruler. It's coming, people. Ringo Starr has just been knighted. The Queen was watching some old episodes of Thomas the Tank Engine the other day with William's kids and found his voice the most intriguing and decided to offer him a knighthood. The meeting was not very pleasant for her at the ceremony, though. The Queen said Starr kept rambling out about a band he used to be in and became quite boring for her in the end. Peace and love, peace and love. And finally, England were bowled out for, 58. They clearly have zero fight left in them, which is ironic as they've just reselected Ben Stokes. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9, coming up by discussion with Ulrico Gretsch-Kumbo and discussion around new ways of creating amazing visual material. All of that coming up on cliffcentral.com in the next couple of minutes. Don't forget, if you want to come to our movie events at cliffcentral.com, that's next week. And blah, 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 blah.
This is cliffcentral.com.